Today on the show, we talk about the five checkboxes of hobbies. Evan shares how choosing Phi is increasing his income by over $600 a month. Charlene shares her second generation Phi win. And Brad's mom gets him the best gift ever. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose Fi Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, congratulations. You made it to the weekend. This is your Friday Roundup and so much to cover in this amazing episode that we had this past week with Cody Berman from Fly to Fi. You know, I think he may be the youngest guest that we've had to date, but don't let that fool you. That episode was absolutely actionable in every way, shape or form. And I have to believe that his youth made it relatable, and it may make it relatable for your teen or your child that's getting ready to go to college. You need that relatability. You need someone that's closer to it. If I have someone that's 45 years old telling us how they got scholarships in the 80s, that's just not going to be helpful. We need this information now, and Cody absolutely brought it. So I'm incredibly excited to circle back and talk about this with a little bit more depth. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, this was a fantastic episode with Cody, and he does have a lot of actionable insight and details, and he passed them along. And even though he's such a young guy, he's wise beyond his years, obviously. He just kind of stole the show at that Camp Fi, and it wasn't because he was doing anything crazy or theatrical. It was how understated it was. It was how mature he was. I think that came through in the episode, and I was just really pleased with how it came out.
Well, I want to dive into it, but first, let me go ahead and say happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, my birthday was this past week, and yeah, it was cool. I had a whole bunch of family in town. My mom came down from New York, and my brother and his fiance Kristen came up from Santiago, Chile, actually. They were here in Richmond, I guess, getting ready for their wedding, and it just coincided with my birthday. So it was neat. It was nice to spend time with family around the birthday, you know?
Now, are you still holding on to your 30s?
I am. I have one more year.
So. The tail end.
It's funny when you just said someone who's 45 who got scholarships in the 80s. And I'm thinking like, well, first off, that person went to college in 1992. They're not that old.
Feeling a little bit defensive.
just a little bit. But yeah, you're going to love this. I got the absolute coolest present from my mom. It was just the most thoughtful thing. And it shows you that she's a really diligent listener of this podcast. So I get back to my house and there's this canister basically. And I'm like, what on earth is this? It was like 3 feet tall. And I start opening it and it unraveled. And it was actually a couple of enormous laminated maps of the Richmond area and the state of Virginia. And it said, our next adventures are. And there was dry erase markers, right? It was Mrs. Adventure Rich's episode about planned spontaneity, right? And I had mentioned that Laura and I would love to get these laminated maps and really mark out our adventures. Man, what a cool present, right?
Dude, I have chills down my spine. That's amazing. Go mom.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was just, like I said, one of the single most thoughtful presents I've ever received in my life. And we put it to use immediately. That's what's so cool. Like my girls and I, we were standing over the maps with the dry erase marker and just trying to figure out where we were going to go. Literally that very next day, we went on our first adventure. We went on, Jonathan, you've heard of the Capitol Trail here in, I guess, Richmond to Williamsburg. Has that crossed your path?
Yeah, it's like a 55-mile trail. Have you beaten me to it at this point?
I certainly have. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously we didn't walk or bike ride the whole 55-mile trail, but what we did was we drove down into the center of the city. We parked our car at this great park that I didn't even know existed before we did the research for this adventure. And then we took like an hour leisurely walk down this Capitol Trail. It was along the river. We saw this part of Richmond that we had always heard of, but had just simply never been to. And it was just a nice morning. You know, I mean, all in all, it was a short little adventure. It was 2 hours, but we got this great walk in. The morning was gorgeous and it was just a really good time. And that was the very first one that was crossed off the list. And like I said, it just simply would not have happened without that map. So it was just, it was really, really awesome.
I'm having a small amount of jealousy right now. That really is amazing. In fact, the Capitol Trail has been something that's been on our, I guess, memorable moment bucket list, right? For about 6 months. And to be honest with you, I've been waiting for my 15-month-old to just be just a little bit older. So it's attention span. So we don't, you know, take the 45 minutes to an hour to get out there and get all set up and then have him basically say, nope, it's game over. It's time to go home. But we're getting close, man. So we will be out there soon. And I was going to ask you where the location of this secret park is, but I don't have to because all I need to do is come take a picture of your map and I've got it covered.
That is very, very true. And the cool thing is there are so many points where you can park. Like there are a bunch of these different start off points and you can actually rent bicycles at each one. So you guys the three of you could rent a couple bikes and just take a nice leisurely ride. And we wound up doing a walk, but yeah, you could ride as well.
Well, let me ask you a question. So these maps that she got, was this like something that was custom made or did she find these on Amazon or is this like an Etsy type deal? Like where could someone get one of these?
Yeah. So what she did was she bought just regular standard maps, as far as I can tell. So it was just like when you go to the convenience store and there are maps sitting there next to the cash register, she just bought a couple of those, one for the state of Virginia, one for Richmond. But they're large. I mean, they're larger than most maps I've seen. I believe she went to Kinko's basically, and they have a laminating service. Don't quote me. I'm pretty sure she said Kinko's, but I can get some more detail at a later date, but 99% sure Kinko's. And she just took a sheet of paper that she basically printed out on her computer and says, our next adventures are dot, dot, dot. And then she put numbering system 1 through 10 down the sheet in pretty large font. And then she set that on the map. And then on the corner of the map, you know, like where it's not blocking anything, and just had this thing laminated. It's enormous. I mean, Jonathan, it's like 3 feet by 3 feet or more, each of them. They really are significant. She got a couple of dry erase markers and yeah, we're on our way.
All right. Now I'm going to kind of spoil this for you, but like if we were going to have this offline and I just want to kind of walk through the thought process, the problem is we want to have adventures and we want to gamify the process. But you know, what do? So we've gotten some inspiration from Misadventure Rich on build this adventure map, this planned spontaneity map, and you're actually using it and it's bringing joy and value to your life. It's actually connecting you with your family, with your kids. And I can imagine you basically drawing your plans out on this map with Anna and Molly, and they're getting a huge kick out of it. And then you're living it out and then you've got memories attached to it. Okay. That's pretty cool. What would it be like to turn that into a side hustle? You could actually have Anna and Molly start making these maps for the different states or the different cities, the major cities all across the country. And they could actually create a channel on Etsy where they sell these. And now they have a business model and they're funding their second generation FI Roth accounts, right? Now, unfortunately, I just said this publicly on a podcast with tens of thousands of people and this idea will get gobbled up. But this is what it looks like to have an idea that solves a problem that benefits you and then turn it into a small business.
That's really cool. It's amazing how your mind went there immediately. That's neat in and of itself. There's no reason why they couldn't do that. I think it would be neat to see the economics of it and see how much it costs, et cetera. It costs to ship because they're fairly large. But yeah, it's certainly worth looking into.
And then Anna could take that and document what she did and what she was able to do with it. And she could write about it and put it on secondgenfi.com.
Yeah, she honestly, she's mad at me. She the other day, she's like, Daddy, when am I going to write that article for the website about money? And I didn't really have an answer for her. I'm like, we really need to do that. So we have to get that set up. I know now that's the third time we've talked about it on the podcast. And Anna's all in. It's just
Dad slowing things down.
Yep, I pretty much think so. We'll see. But the other kind of funny thing surrounding my birthday was I got an email from Jim Collins who said, "Hey Brad, happy birthday and time to go on Survivor." And I just thought that was so funny that, hey, I mean, Jim's just great. And he listens to the podcast so closely. And it actually spurred me on. Like, I am serious. I am going to apply for Survivor. I wound up just researching it and then found an article that Jeff Probst wrote that basically said, what's your story? Send me a link. We want great players who are compelling storytellers. Hey, I'm a podcaster. Like, I might actually fit that.
Storytelling is what I do. It's who I am.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at that. So yeah, the next time they are open, I legitimately, every single person in this audience can hold me to it. I'm going to apply for that. Obviously, can't promise I'm going to get picked, but I am going to apply.
Oh, dude, this is going to be so much fun. I'm just going to have to figure out the whole, like, because the way that Survivor works, I was thinking about it even after I talked about it last time. The way that Survivor works, you go record and then the episodes are all released after you get back. But you're like under a non-disclosure agreement, I'm sure. And you can't talk about the results in any way, shape or form. So like, I'm going to need to like record with someone else that's not you to talk about your performance on the, you know, most recently released episode. And then I'll bring you in as a guest on your own show to then talk about the remainder of the show. I mean, it's just going to have to be a thing. We're going to have to structure it out. So I'm taking volunteers for whoever wants to fill in for Brad to discuss how he did on the previous episodes of Survivor when it goes live. I'm assuming that this is just going to happen. I'm operating under a 100% assumption that Brad is going to be on the next season, season 245 of Survivor.
Yeah, that'll be a good problem to have if we have to deal with working around my schedule and non-disclosure agreements. So yeah, I'll be okay with that.
All right, well, that was fun. But let's go ahead and circle back to this past week's episode with Cody and really go into, you know, our personal takeaways on this episode. The first thing that really stood out to me was just the fact that you can start prepping for college while you're in high school. I mean, this is incredibly powerful. I think that we have kind of lost our way. There's so many people that are considering college as this place to obtain basic information, like learn how to learn type stuff. And in my mind, I've always been thinking, isn't that what high school is for? Isn't that why we did the 4 years of high school and went through that torturous process? Why are we now offloading that onto college? There has to be a more optimized approach. And in my mind, it's clearly that you think about while you're in high school, how can I get those first 2 years of college done? And I was oblivious to this. I was actually talking about this with my wife and my mom. The idea of doing an AP English class, something as simple as that, I was like, why would I take a harder English class when I could just take an easier English class? I mean, that was generally my mindset. My mindset wasn't, wow, what can I do to knock out those first 2 years of college while I'm still in high school? And imagine surrounding yourself with just as few as three or four other individuals that were thinking along this way. You know, a lot of times we talk about you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with. And we think about that in the context of adulthood. What would it be like to have that mindset in your teens, to have two or three people like Cody in your life that are just motivating you, not because you are this incredibly smart, intelligent person, but just because you're willing to change the average of the five people that you're hanging around with? What would it be like to have that mindset in high school? It would transform everything.
Yeah, it certainly would. And I think there are probably two sides of this, right? So there's having that group of friends who are pushing you to take these harder courses and to look into ways to get college credits. But then I think it's also essential that you put it to good use from a FI perspective. My friends, we took a ton of AP courses. I just took a significant amount of them. Even at the University of Richmond, where I went to, I wound up coming in with, I forget, it was somewhere north of 20 credits, I think. So it was almost a full year. But I think that in and of itself is fine, but really it's about the FI mentality. So how can I take all that work that I did in high school and help me actually save money? I didn't graduate a half a year early or a year early because I did all that stuff. It just allowed me to take a couple extra courses because some of my prerequisites were taken up.
So, yeah, because you came out with a student loan debt. I mean, you did all the hard work, but then came out with just as much debt as everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a ton, but I definitely did have some debt. So, I mean, I've described multiple times here, Jonathan, how like utterly oblivious and stupid I was. Even though I thought I had my head on straight, I did obviously do really well in high school, and it afforded me the opportunity to go to just about any college that I wanted. But what I should have done, and with the benefit of hindsight, I should have said, okay, well, I can get into these great schools. And that means that the other 90% of colleges in America probably would let me go for free or close to free. Not only that, but if I went in to those schools, I probably would have had a year or more of credits worth, because it's usually somewhat less strenuous to get college credit based on AP scores and such. So like it would have been even better, because then I wouldn't have had 4 years of opportunity cost, even at free, right? Because I wasn't earning any money. So I think it's important, and I'm rambling a little bit here, Jonathan, but I hope this is coming across, is that you need to get it right both sides. There's a cost to college, obviously. It's a cost both in terms of dollars out, but also that opportunity cost. So trying to go for free or getting these scholarships, which I'm sure we'll talk about here shortly, that's great. But also cutting down on the time in college, I think, is really important as well.
Yeah, there was an old joke in my peer group. So this will tell you something about the average of the five people I was hanging out with. But they were like, graduating in 4 years is like leaving the party at 10 o'clock. That was an okay statement that we laughed about. That was funny, but it was sad, right? That's what all of us did. We just took longer, and we felt no urgency to leave the scene because, you know, this was our reality. And I think that we're fighting a tidal wave of that. And if you're going to combat that, if you're going to come into this world with a different worldview, you have to see the upshot. You have to see the benefits, because what you might perceive is this, what am I losing? Well, I'm not getting the full college experience. The full college experience is costing the average, you know, American $300,000. I mean, that's just what it looks like. That's the MSRP for college if you just go all in on that. And everybody usually does one or two things right, which bring that down. We all have little things that we figured out, but I think it's very rare for an individual, especially a young teen, to go into the college frame with this totally optimized view of what it should look like. So with Brad, with what you did, you were working your tail off in high school, but you didn't connect that to what does it look like beyond college. It was all about just getting to college, and then you kind of let college happen to you from there. But what would it look like to optimize every aspect of it? I think that FI allows us to go back to those early years and get a little bit more perspective. But having someone like Cody, who's so closely tied to it, kind of walk us through like the individual choices that he made, stacking one win on top of another, and showing you how quickly he's going to be able to reach financial independence due to these decisions in the early years. Remember, every dollar you earn in your teens is more valuable than a dollar you earn in your 50s, right? And that indicates that time is such a valuable resource. If we can make just a few right moves in those early years, I was reading, I think online, if you can get $168,000 in your investment accounts, whether it be 401k or taxable accounts, if you can get $168,000 into those accounts by the age of 28, you're just done. In inflation adjusted dollars, you're going to be a millionaire by the time that you reach, you know, traditional retirement. It's just that simple. Now, not everybody is working from that frame, but it indicates the power of compounding over time. Your time is precious. And if you stack time with an optimized strategy early on, the game just got easy.
Yeah, that's a very, very important point to get across. Time is essential, and starting early is essential. And it sounds like Cody clearly did this. I love how he went after these local scholarships, right? He was saying, and this was such a great actionable takeaway, is create these templates. Don't reinvent the wheel every single time you apply for one of these 50 scholarships. I mean, I think he applied for some absurd number like that. And if he had to sit down and write a completely new application each time, and he also said he did this for internships when it came time to do that in college. And it's just such a smart strategy, is create a template, create a base to work off of, and then obviously tailor it for that individual scholarship or internship or whatever it may be. But don't just redo the work over and over again. Create these templates. And I know I do this with emails. And Jonathan, we do this with emails for Choose a FI. We have probably 10 or 20 different items that we just type over and over again. And it's just really inefficient, even to just find it back in an old email and copy and paste and then answer personalized, you know, the rest of it. But what we did was we set up these templates. And I've done this for a while in Gmail for many of my emails, is there's something called canned responses. So anybody out there looking for a little life hack today, is set up canned responses in Gmail. And even if it's just something that you type over and over again, just a couple lines, just all you have to do is just create this canned response and save it. And then you essentially just paste it in because you have your little list of canned responses. You find the one and just click it, and the text shows up in the email. It's absolutely brilliant. And I think pretty much anybody who has a job in general, this is not just Jonathan and Brad, the podcasters, but anybody who has a job where just really sit back and look at what you type on a daily or weekly basis in emails, because you spend a lot of your day emailing. Why not make it more efficient and quicker? So I think that's a really, really smart strategy just for life.
I emailed my mom and she said, "Is this a canned response?" No, mom.
Yeah, I think you might need to make it a little more personalized then. But yeah, I mean, that's the general gist of it is, yeah, just copy and paste and then have the space and then the time to write some personalized info. I think that it's discipline equals freedom. You're taking the time to set up these responses. So that's the discipline. And it then affords you the freedom to maybe spend more time on the email that you otherwise would just be typing the same stuff over and over again. So I think it's a real value add.
And one of my favorite things was the idea of picking a job in college and being so strategic with it. This is not to disparage anyone that has chosen to work in the dining hall. But if you are looking at college as an optimized approach and you're gaming this thing out, there are lanes that will give you outsized results for the work that you're willing to put in. And so I think like you need to think about this stuff. How it's kind of like thinking about life as a Venn diagram and looking for overlapping benefits. I'm going to tie this to hobbies in just a second, but let's look at it in the context of picking a job while you're in college. You can pick something that earns a lot of money. You can pick something that will allow you to do significant amount of networking. You can pick something that will allow you to multitask. So you're getting paid while you're studying, or you could pick the dining hall. I don't know. So he latched onto something that was giving him incredible networking benefits. He found something that was giving him a new skill set, and likely he was also able to do work while he was there, do schoolwork, do studying. That's the kind of job that you want to find. One of those benefits can outweigh another depending on what field you're going into. If networking is going to be a massive part of what you're doing, and it's clear that college is the connection between the education that you're getting and the job, then, you know, teacher's assistant will probably be a very, very good choice for you. Conversely, if you're something where it's very unlikely that college is actually going to give you that network, give you that connection to that first employer, then just making sure that you get your grades up and that you can spend all that extra time studying is going to be ideal. And so just think about those first few choices and also give us your feedback. What job did you find in college that allowed you to get some of these Venn diagram benefits that we were highlighting?
Cody really benefited from this job, not just for the many reasons that you listed, networking with teachers and TAs and doing the homework and earning money, but he learned a really significant skill. He now, as he said, he's an expert level Microsoft Excel user and probably the rest of the Office suite as well. Just in and of itself, there is a significant amount of value there. I know back at my old company, we had hired someone to create Excel sheets for us. Like, we had a real significant task and we hired this guy who came in from a real significant and reputable firm, and he wasn't in tax or audit. He was basically in creating Excel spreadsheets. And I know that sounds crazy, but like, that was a huge value to us. That added just an enormous, enormous amount of value and saved so much time. And just that skill, like, Cody picked up that skill. He could have almost certainly done that and earned a huge salary per hour. And I suspect there are many, many thousands, if not tens of thousands of companies all across America that would hire someone like that who could add value to each and every employee just by creating Excel sheets and speeding things up. Because, right, what do people do in regular office jobs? They sit there on the computer in Excel a lot of times. And if you're just hunting and pecking, like you said, using the sum formula, well, that's not really good enough, you know? But hiring someone like Cody, there's real value. So I just thought that was really cool. And that speaks to your Venn diagram issue, which is find this overlap, find where this can help your life. Obviously, the networking with people that can help your life. No reason to disparage someone working in a dining hall, but is that really gonna tick any of these boxes? You can't do your homework. You're not really networking. other than a random, hey, how's it going today? Or how's the weather? Right. That's not really networking. And you're not learning any discernible skills. So like, look for those ways that if you need to work, then, hey, I can get some extra benefit from this.
And Brad, I thought this would be a fun time to talk about hobbies in particular, because Cody, you know, this kind of idea of a Venn diagram and looking for those overlapping benefits. He's interested in Ultimate Frisbee. He kind of grew up with it. He's interested in starting a side hustle. He understands accounting. And together he brings all those, just like we were talking about with Solve the Problem and with Anna and Molly and building these, you know, pick your next adventure maps. He is creating a business selling disc golf Frisbees. And it really is remarkable, but I wanted to use this as an opportunity to talk about the overlapping benefits of hobbies. How do you go about picking your hobby? Now, you could just pick anything, and that's certainly fine. There's a million reasons that people enjoy different hobbies, but I just thought, you know, in the context of looking at things through a life optimization strategy where everything is adding value and providing you overlapping benefits, it would be very interesting to talk about how hobbies fit into this and maybe give a few examples of ones that meet, you know, some of these different criteria. And everybody listening to this will be able to extrapolate out, you know, what hobbies they've incorporated and then maybe evaluate what additional benefits those hobbies bring. I'm a huge believer, and I've kind of picked this up from you, in the idea of growth mindset, the idea that you are not a fixed individual. You can become anything and anybody that you want to become, but you have to be willing to be bad at something before you can be good at it.
Yeah, Jonathan, that sounds great. I'd love to chat about hobbies. And you talked in there about kind of like the boxes to check. I guess we'll call them the check boxes of hobbies. Talk me through what items would be on that list for you.
Yeah, you know, I spent a little bit of time thinking about this as I was getting ready for this segment. And as I kind of went through it, I realized that any hobby that you would pursue will likely fall into these different categories. And there's going to be tons of overlap, but it's very interesting to think through with any particular situation, you know, what checkboxes this hobby is hitting. So the first one would be just entertainment, or maybe even altruism. It's bringing some level of joy to your life. That would be the first checkbox. The second one would be the price. Some hobbies are incredibly expensive. Golf. Some are incredibly inexpensive. So Frisbee or disc golf. Three, networking, social interaction. It is a way for you to come together with other individuals. You form a community around it. Four, fitness. It actually makes you healthier. It decreases your healthcare cost. And to some degree, it probably elevates your mood as well. And there's a lot of evidence to support that when you exercise, when you are a healthier version of yourself, your body releases endorphins and it is a mood lifter. And then five would be it adds a skill set, maybe even a marketable skill set. It's something that allows you to start a side hustle or a business. Those are, in my mind, the five checkboxes of hobbies.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think as you're going through that list, it definitely rings true to me. But I think it's important to note that every hobby, certainly by definition, is not going to check each one of those boxes. We're not implying that in any way. So not every hobby is going to have a fitness component. That's not what you're saying. But if you can check as many of these boxes as possible with each individual hobby, then I think that is kind of what you're talking about, right? Holistically, of what you're generally looking for in your hobbies as a whole. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but they're also very connected. Like, I think as you're grading your hobby, you know, if you wanted to take the time to do that, some people could just walk away from this and say, yeah, okay. But other people could say, all right, I'm open to any hobby. I could do anything. How would I pick one? There, for the optimizer, there would be room for that individual to say, if I can do, you know, I can do anything, but I can't do everything. Why don't I look and find something that would, I think, appeal to me, but has lots of overlap. So an individual that doesn't have anything invested in golf, don't go do golf. It's going to cost you millions of dollars over your investing lifetime. But on the flip side of that, if you were to say, okay, how about disc golf? What would that do? Well, it's inexpensive. So, and also there, I should point out, there's probably an inverse corollary here that is worth looking at as well. Like, if enough other boxes are checked off, then potentially it's worth it to be a little more expensive. So let's go back to my initial example with disc golf. All right, it's inexpensive because it can be done with two or three other individuals. It gives you some of the community or networking or social benefits that maybe you would say golf would give you, traditional golf. There's a fitness aspect. Plenty of people actually run the disc golf course as they're playing it. So instead of being in a cart that takes you with your beer to the next hole, you're actually getting your cardio in while you're doing it. And Yeah, I mean, it's fun. So it's checking off a lot of boxes. That's pretty cool. Let's go back and maybe let's do video games. Video games are not so, I mean, I know you can play online with your friends, but I kind of think there's a point of diminishing returns with the networking aspect. It is fun. So that's great. It's entertainment. It's not improving your fitness. I'm sorry. I don't actually know anybody that got fit using the Nintendo Wii. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure somebody can disprove this, but I think as a whole, the Nintendo Wii is not getting you remarkably fitter. Is it a skill? Is it marketable? Well, there are people that are making money online playing video games due to their advanced skill. I suspect it's not going to be you, but it certainly is out there. I think there are entire countries that have large segments of the population where this is just what they do and they're incredibly good at it. But that's very interesting, right, Brad?
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And I think I probably would add to the fitness one, maybe fitness and or mental benefits. So like Bridge is one that I'm thinking of, playing the game Bridge. So I'm clearly fun and entertainment, social networking, especially you're talking like, who are your bridge partners? If they're Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who are two very famous bridge players, well, that's pretty good networking, right? Mental benefits instead of fitness. You can't really argue you're getting much fitness, but certainly mentally you're getting much sharper. And price. It's pretty cheap to play a game of bridge. So like, I'm just trying to think of just a way to add to this set of checkboxes. I think that might be a little addition. And one thing I kind of wanted to talk about was the last one you said, the skill and or marketable talent or whatever it may be, starting a side hustle. I would add to that the pursuit of mastery. So I think this is something that is so lacking in people's lives. We just go through the world and we do our stuff. And it's the same thing over and over again. And you don't really pursue any monumental goal. Whereas if you have a hobby, for instance, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and CrossFit, I know I've talked a number of times that these are my two hobbies now. And I've really gotten into them in just the past 2 years. But both of them, I think I like these in particular because of that pursuit of mastery. And something that is not easy to come by, right? This is something that could take me 20 to 50 years, probably, when you're talking about jiu-jitsu, to become a real true expert. And I'm not sure you ever get to the point where you don't learn in that. And to get from where I am now to a black belt level and then a top tier black belt level, I mean, that legitimately could take me 30 years. But I don't look at that as a negative at all. I look at that as, wow, this is something that every single day, if I wanted, I could learn something new. I could watch a YouTube video. I could train with my friends. I could do X, Y, and Z just to get better. And it's that pursuit of mastery that has been so lacking in my life. And I think this certainly applies to CrossFit as well.
I was really hoping you were going to bring this up because I actually wanted to go through some of the different hobbies and kind of go through the different checkboxes and CrossFit in particular. So it is expensive, right? It's way more expensive than your Planet Fitness membership. It's, you know, way more expensive than just doing bodyweight exercises at home. But I think it's interesting to take something through some of the checkboxes and show the value for you as the individual. That value won't be the same for somebody else necessarily, but for you, I think it makes sense. So obviously it's fun. It's entertaining. And honestly, if you're working out by yourself, it can be a little bit of a drag. Now you can get a workout partner and I think that you can replicate that experience, but CrossFit is fun. There's something motivating about being there. There's a huge fitness aspect to this. And with both CrossFit and with the jiu-jitsu, there's a mental game as well. It just puts you in a better mental place when you exert yourself. And that's really remarkable. And then I love that you're pursuing this level of mastery, not with the expectation that you're going to be a master 6 months from now or a year from now, but it's a lifelong pursuit of being good at something. And then with CrossFit, it's also checking the networking, the social aspect. You made connections that have been remarkable just by being willing to do this. And 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that's not something that you would have even considered. So I guess what I wanted to do with that, and I'm going to give you a couple more other examples, is just take whatever hobby that you're interested in right now and kind of go through these checkboxes and say, what is this hitting for me? If you're satisfied with that answer, I think it actually potentially will make you enjoy that hobby even more. And if you come to the end of that and you say, huh, I kind of feel like that's not doing a whole lot for me. Well, maybe this will be the motivation you need to pick a new hobby. So there's a couple others that I could go through right now. So board games, let's look at board games. It's kind of expensive. I mean, it's not, you know, you're paying for a new game every so often, but it's fun. It's entertaining. It can be a social aspect as long as you're not playing solitaire. So you bring in some cooperative games. You could have a board game group. This could be your very close community. No fitness. Maybe some mental game, I don't know. No fitness though. And it's not really a skill and it's not really marketable. Are you happy with that? Are you happy with how that lands? You could do the same thing with gardening or composting and just come up with why did you pursue this hobby? And after you go through the check boxes, you can then say, wow, that's pretty cool. It is actually adding a lot to my life. It's adding a lot of value to my life. I think this is just a good exercise, generally speaking.
Yeah, I agree. I think just reflecting on how you spend your time is always important. And yeah, certainly if you're talking about a hobby that you're spending a significant amount of time on a weekly or monthly basis, yeah, really sit back and reflect and say, is this adding value to my life? And look at these. I think this is a pretty good list of checkboxes for sure. And it doesn't have to hit all of them. Like you said, Jonathan, CrossFit that I do is not inexpensive by any means. There's no way to argue otherwise. So if this were a pure five play and someone who's listening to this was saying, hey, Brad, you're wasting a ton of money. What are you doing? You could do all that stuff in your garage or just doing bodyweight exercises. Well, yeah, that's true. But I know myself. And I think that's an important part just of life, again, is knowing yourself and knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I know motivation is very difficult for me when it comes to exercise. So while I do have a lot of this equipment at home and I could theoretically just go on to CrossFit.com and get a workout that day and do it at home, I know I just simply will not work as hard at home. So having that camaraderie, having that social networking there, having those friends there who push you on to work harder, that means something to me and that's worth it. So of course, I found a little FI workaround for not getting a actual membership because I hate paying monthly memberships. So I wound up buying a punch ticket, which actually winds up being less expensive for me otherwise, just based on time that I'd be away for conferences and trips and stuff. So like this is something that I am very content with. And I almost love that I'm bad at it, Jonathan. Like I know it sounds crazy, but like I've seen where I've come just in this first year and it was really starting at a pretty pitiful place. And now I'm getting on the path towards competence, but man, it's going to be years before I'm really good at this. And I find that just exhilarating. I really genuinely do.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And it was fun to talk about those in particular, because that is all about growth mindset. You are not a jiu-jitsuer. I'm pretty sure I just made that up, but we're going to roll with it. Like that's not who you were as a teenager. It's not who you were as a young adult. But now it's what you do with your free time. It's something that you're exploring. That's really, really motivating. Brad, one of the things that me and you have talked about is really trying to actually make it to some of the local groups all around the country. But we're going to be going to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania for a conference for Podcast Movement. And we said this would just be a missed opportunity not to try to meet listeners in Philadelphia. So we are going to be doing a meetup the Sunday, July 22nd at Yard Brewing Company in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I think we're going to be starting at 6:00. And if you're in Philadelphia or in the surrounding area, we would love for you just to come by and say hi. We'd love to meet you. It's going to be a blast. And it's not just going to be us. We're going to be joining up with our good friends over at Stacking Benjamins, Joe, Saul, Sehi, and also Fire Drill Podcast.
Yeah, and Jonathan, it should be an absolute blast. I know we had one of these meetups when I went to Omaha, Nebraska for the Berkshire Hathaway meeting, and we had something crazy, like 35, 40 people show up, and it was just a fantastic time. This should be even bigger, I would imagine. So if you are in the general Philadelphia area and want to come down and meet us, but more importantly, meet other Choose a Fi community members, 6:00 on Sunday, the 22nd, we'd love to see you.
And speaking of local groups, I keep bringing up San Diego and I'm not totally just trying to rave just about San Diego, but what they're doing is so flipping cool. Jennifer helps admin that group and she just set up a post saying for the July 2018 meeting, there was a lot of interest in doing case studies. And so they've actually set up a website for people that want to participate and submit their information as a case study. and it's all anonymous. So you get to put your information online. And then at the next meetup, they're going to crowdsource it and break it down and come up with an actual FI strategy for that individual. So I mentioned that, one, just to say that they're crushing it. And two, to kind of extrapolate this out to the other groups. If you're trying to figure out what these groups can actually become, what benefits and services they can actually offer. And as we continue to say, they're better because you're in them and you're active. So thank you so much for being a part of this. Wouldn't you want the opportunity to get a personalized FI plan for your situation and be able to have people in different spaces in life, optimizers, accountants, financial planners, kind of have this holistic look and come up with a strategy for an individual situation? How powerful would that be?
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. And yeah, to have people in the FI community do that who already have this knowledge, yeah, it seems like a big win. So very, very cool idea.
First comment was from Amy. She says, I'm sad we can't make it. Are these ever recorded to watch later? I don't think they are currently. So you do have to go.
Yeah. And Jonathan, Dan on the Facebook group made a post that was near and dear to my heart, which is, this may not be a big deal for some, but I'm super proud of myself. I did something on my own car for the first time ever. Changed my air filter and cabin air filter on my Accord for a grand total of $44. It would have ran me about $250 at the Honda dealership. In hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have waited so long on the cabin air filter because it's kind of filthy here in the picture, but I'm taking baby steps over here. And I just thought this was really great. Dan sounds like me, somebody who would have just taken it to the dealership and, oh, hey, you need air filters. That costs $247. And I would have.
Because it's never less than $247. I think there is some sort of hive mind that decides the minimum cost at the car dealership is $247.
Yeah, it always seems some astronomical figure. And for people who know how to do this, it's a tiny little fraction of that. So yeah, Dan, great job taking action. Very proud of you.
And we got an email from Evan saying, been doing a binge listen on your podcast for days, equal parts heady and accessible, a tough balance to keep. This picture captures what you inspired for me and my brother, our post-grad roommates and FI accountability partners to do. So they have two daily commuter bikes plus a sleeper sofa in their spare room that they started renting out for $600 a month. That is just looking at life a little bit differently, right, Brad?
Whoa, $600 for renting a sleeper sofa? Is that what you said?
Hey, that's what they said. And they said, hashtag we choose FI. So yeah, we got attached to that.
Wow, we choose FI indeed. Gotta love it.
Brad, your sleeper sofa, that's a missed opportunity, right?
Yeah, now in my new house, we have a very nice sleeper sofa downstairs in the nice cool basement. So yeah, that might be an option here.
Choose FI, Airbnb a sleeper sofa edition.
I choose FI indeed. That's very cool.
You know, in last Facebook thread that I wanted to mention on this particular conversation, Charlene shared her second generation FI win. In her words, she says, I just needed to share with a group who will understand why I'm jumping about with glee. My 15-year-old just got his first paycheck and reminded me that we needed to set up a Roth IRA account so he could deposit his whole check. We have just faxed in the paperwork to set up his account. At the rate he's going, he will be retiring about the same time that we do. I am so proud. That is mind-blowing. That is so cool, Charlene. Congratulations.
Wow, I'd love to learn more. Hopefully, Charlene can follow up on how he got into FI. I mean, I'm assuming maybe he listens to the podcast, but maybe not. Maybe Charlene just taught him about FI. I'd be fascinated to find out, like, how does a 15-year-old get to the point where they want to deposit 100% of their check in their Roth IRA? That's remarkable.
But what we're doing, you know, we as the FI community are doing is we're changing the anchor. We're changing the norm. Like in most family situations, you're having to explain to your kids, and it's mind-numbingly boring and it's going to sleep, the benefits of the 401k and the Roth IRA and all these different things. In this little niche, in this little community, the kids in these families are saying, yes, I just got my first paycheck. We can set up my Roth IRA. That is not normal. That is amazing. And hopefully it will be the new normal, right?
Yeah, the new normal indeed. Just reframing where that anchor point is. I love that. That's really, really cool.
And speaking of Roth IRA, we got an email from Daniel, who's actually played a voicemail on a past episode, basically talking about all these life optimization strategies. He's in the right place, right? But he had another one to share with us. He said, hey guys, active listener, Fi Journeyman, I wanted to comment on the M1 investment platform. That's something that we have talked about several times. And I think we talked about it in detail in episode 71R. He said, recently, Navy Federal Credit Union opened a platform called Easy Start Investor. It's a pretty basic investment platform open to Navy Federal members, which allows you to create a Roth IRA, traditional IRA, or regular investment account. You get unlimited trades for $2.99 a month with accounts under $7,500, and then $8.99 for amounts in between $7,500 and $24,000. It's discounted for active military. This program is going to allow you to purchase fractional shares, much like M1, based on preset amounts, and you have access to about 100 M-Shore securities across different sectors such as tech, defense, consumer, industrial, etc. You even get access to VTI, BND, and Vanguard International ETFs. For securities, you'll see heavy hitters like Caterpillar, Lockheed, Google, Costco, Procter & Gamble, and so on. It's a great tool for active or retired military members of Navy Federal Credit Union and their dependents with accounts. Second-generation fire members can get their start. I use it myself and have a side Roth IRA and basic investment account to build big dividend aristocrats to see how it performs. The only downside is that you cannot buy instantly at market. You select securities and the orders are processed daily at 11 at 2. Aside from that, I feel like it's a great intro tool to portfolio building and even Vanguard's major ETFs. The website is clean and easy to navigate, passing along for military and dependents or DOD civilians. Take care and Fi on. You know, it's these little tips. That's definitely going to benefit somebody. I have been playing around with M1 a lot, and I actually showed it to my dad this past week just to show him how easy it makes automatically maintaining your asset allocation. Brad, frankly, it's mind-blowing. I went ahead and put a couple $1,000s in there, and I set up 3 pies. Now, keep this in mind. Like, a pie can be anything you want it to be. You could have a, you know, you can name it whatever you want, your top 10 dream funds, and you could pick your particular stocks out, or you could just have a pie that's just VTI. Or think about it this way. You could have a pie that is named Anna, a pie that's named Molly. You could name one pie after each one of your kids, right? And then inside that, you could pick a few ETFs that you wanted to have for each of them. They could be mirrored, but they could each have their own pie. But what's crazy about this is it automatically maintains your asset allocation. So I don't want to use the word rebalance because it doesn't sell and then buy other stuff unless you specifically tell it to. But what it does is it automatically preserves whatever asset allocation that you have said that you wanted. So for instance, let's say you have 3 pies. You have a Brad pie, an Anna pie, and a Molly pie. So you have $1,000 in there, and you have those 3 pies reflecting 33% you know, 1/3 in each one of those pies. And each side of those pies, you select your 5 or 6 different ETFs or individual stocks that you want it to hold, and you tell inside that pie what allocation you want it to be. If it ever gets out of sync because one is dramatically outperforming the rest, what it will do when you add new funds in, and you can add it however often you want to, once a month, once a week, whatever, it will then buy the underweighted ones, the ones that are not keeping up with the growth on the other, which is just really incredible because it just makes it so easy. Frankly, it makes it too easy. You just have to get started. And as we talked about, if you do this in your teens and in your early 20s, it's just profound, profound how powerful it is as you get into your 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah, I like that ability to set that target, and it just essentially balances it for you. And that's a pretty neat functionality. Again, you've been diving into this M1 much more than I have, so I don't really know all that much about it at this point. But from the way that you're raving about it, it sounds like a pretty useful tool for sure.
I got my dad excited about it. Like, he goes to sleep whenever I talk about index funds. It just doesn't light him up. And I think he thinks he's going to find that one winner. And so he's kind of been playing outside the lines a little bit. But like, this captured his imagination because he can combine that safety net of index funds with that little bit of stock picking that he wants to do on the side. So like, to set this out practically, what it could mean is, let's say that it's not a Brad, Anna, and Molly pie. Let's say it's just a index fund pie, right? So maybe that's 33% and it's just all VTI. And then maybe you have your energy sector pie. So that's like your core blue chip, your standard stuff. Those are your individual stocks that you want to pick. And the third one, those are your sexy stocks, right? Those are the ones that you, as soon as you think about big companies, the ones you grab. So maybe like Apple, Facebook, Google. I mean, frankly, if you own VTI, what's amazing about VTI and VTSAX and all those, you own a large percentage of those, but maybe you're like, you know what? I think I want to own a little bit more of Google or a little bit more of Amazon or a little bit more of Facebook. For my dad, that holds significant appeal. And so he can then say, all right, I have a 33% baseline with VTI. I've got my blue chip funds that's there in the middle. And then down here at the bottom, I've got my, you know, those big 10, the ones that obviously come to mind. And so it manages all of that and all the fees that we talk about. M1 doesn't have any fees. And because he's not selling anything to constantly rebalance, then you don't have to deal with short-term capital gains. It's still a buy and hold position. And it's just automatically, passively in the background, maintaining your target asset allocation. And then you can track it in Personal Capital. Absolutely, absolutely amazing. So we talk about that a little bit more. I did a review article on it. It's choosefi.com/M1. And you can find out a little bit more about that. But dude, I'm loving it.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. That's cool. I'm becoming more and more open-minded. So normally I don't like any kind of newfangled gadgets or tools. I'm pretty content with my normal Vanguard. But yeah, it does sound quite interesting for sure. All right. And Jonathan, one other Facebook post really stuck out to me this week, and it was from Prasanth. And the post was, over the last couple of days, I did introduction training to a batch of around 22 people of new recruits to my workplace who are fresh out of college. At the end of the training session, I took an hour or so to introduce the concepts of FI, took them through the shockingly simple math to early retirement blog post, introduced them to Choose FI and J.L. Collins's book, and a couple of other India-centric FI blogs, which, Brad speaking, I didn't know those existed, honestly, so that's cool. Many were skeptical of the ideas, but a few were really interested. Even if only a couple of them latch on to FI, I would consider it time well spent. And what a cool thing. Talk about a way to spread the fire, but also to do good in the world, right? These are 22 people just out of college, and they probably don't know anything about finances. And man, if you could have gotten that session at 22, how far ahead would you be now? I mean, for most people out there in the world. So really, really well done. And yeah, always love hearing these stories of spreading of the fire.
All right, guys. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. As we mentioned on Monday, we also really do want to support Cody with this business that he's building. And we know that there are tons of people in the community that maybe listened to that episode and said, huh, disc golf, that sounds cool. Or maybe we're listening to this episode about hobbies and say, I've never tried that, but I'd love to get into it and want to experiment a little bit further. We would love to support Cody and you with that growth mindset. And to do that, we have purchased two sets of Cody's disc, which can be found at arsenaldisc.com. We purchased two sets and we're giving them away for someone on this show. If you want to enter the drawing, all you need to do, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there and leave us a short written review. And then send us an email to feedback@choosefi.com, letting us know that you left the review and what screen name you left it under. You need to have that submission in by Monday, the 16th of July, and then we will announce the winner on that Friday roundup. You also need to mention in that email that you are specifically interested in the disc golf as well. Otherwise, we'll obviously hook you up with a book instead. And the books that we offer are the ones that we have mentioned every week. It's J.L. Collins, The Simple Path to Wealth, Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future, and Vincent Puglisi's book, Freelance to Freedom. And Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan. So this week we have one winner, and the winner is Jared. And he said, they keep me coming back for more. I've been listening to ChooseFI since they started. The quality of the guests, conversations, and ensuing actionable takeaways keep me coming back for more. I'm continuously inspired by the guest stories, as well as those of the hosts, Brad and Jonathan, that I too, one day, will leave my job to pursue something I truly enjoy doing, and not because I need to, but because I want to. We're fortunate enough to be fairly high income earners, but unfortunately, we're only decent savers prior to discovering the ChooseFI community. But inspired, driven, and now with a clear, achievable vision in place, one day is much closer than we ever imagined. In the 1.5 years of pursuing FI, we've slashed our expenses by 30% without sacrificing our lifestyle and enjoyment, doubled our net worth, and are well on our way to achieving our $100,000 savings goal for 2018. If you want to know how, start by listening to ChooseFI. And thank you, Jared. That's an amazing, amazing review and well done on taking action.
If you got value from today's episode, take 1 second, press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.